This is tape two of the Scott Vaughn interview. When the last tape ended, we were talking about the reorganization of Ron Fisher and Beth German?
Bess.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There are times at which one of our people, Bess or Sarah, attend a college fair in some big city, and we're the only MSU representative there.
Mm.
So since Ron made that addition to the staff and reorientation to it, we had in the 90s, we had late 80s and 90s, the size of our freshman class had slipped through the 300 level, down to the 200 level, and at least for 1 year, below 200 students. Our freshman classes now are running in the 450s. Mm. Our total membership got below 1,000, and it's now over 2,000. Mm. And this is it's entirely due to the fact that we have a very different focus on the staff. In the older days, we were all necessarily, the way things were organized, generalists.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember some years ago, 10 years ago or so, finding, I think it was still when we had Gopher and before we had the World Wide Web,
mm-hmm.
finding a site that advertised higher education opportunities for gifted students. And we weren't on it. And so I sent them an email message asking why. And they said, because you chose not to be on it. And of course, the reason we chose not to be on it, it would cost $50 or something to be on it. So it may have been more than that. I'm sure. Exaggerating. But, mm-hmm. but so, you know, I got onto them. I said, send me the information. So we started putting an ad in this publication. It was actually a publication.
Mm-hmm.
They had it online, but it was a glossy that they sent out to students who had been successful in the various area talent searches that are conducted all around the country. Duke does one in the South, Johns Hopkins, Northwestern, and so on. And it has contact information and so on. And we weren't on it. So we drew it up, we put it up, we sent it in to them. We got from them each year a list of students who had responded to it, and we sorted them out. And this was all stuff that admissions was unwilling or unable to do, given their gigantic task of a place this size. But really what we've done is move from what was going on in the 60s, and now we're much closer to one another than the things that happened in the middle, because there was this very active Honors College involvement in recruiting high-ability students, especially out-of-state students, but not entirely. So Ron's refocus of the staff has brought that about, and some other changes. But we were beginning to build back up when Don left. We went through some very tough demographic times.
Mm-hmm.
The 200 wasn't just because we weren't recruiting efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the 60s, MSU was the first public institution to participate in the National Merit Scholarship Program. Okay? And in the 1960s, into the early 70s, people who had been named semi-finalists in that competition, the first public university they heard from, no matter where they were in the country, was Michigan State University. And what happened in the 70s and into the early 80s is that every institution in the country, college, university, whatever, bought tapes from the National Merit Corporation and sent out stuff to people. So my daughter, who started college in 1989 or 90, something like that, we had 3 grocery sacks full of stuff. that she received in the course of trying to get her to apply. So the competition came in where there was no real competition before, and at the same time we had begun to reduce the investment we were making in out-of-state recruiting and high-ability recruiting because it was becoming tougher, which meant that each catch cost a little more than it used to cost. So you cut that back because... So we ended up at one point having our national search, so-called, was was Greater Michigan, and that's all it was. So we've gone back to a national search, and Sarah and or Bess go to California, they go to Florida, they go to New York, they go to Chicago, they go all over the country, D.C., to college fairs, and that has, the demographics are better now, but the demographics combined with the more effective and efficient, better recruiting practices have brought us back to about the same level we were in terms of members in 1973 or 74. And really from the late 70s all the way through, it was a steady decline. I think the lowest we hit, as I say, was 198 in a freshman class and a total membership of 905, something like that.
Do you think some of the budget problems that President Mackey experienced was part of that mix, or?
Well, other things? One thing about it, I think it's true in higher education that everybody's typically in the same boat, in at least in public institutions. When we're having budget problems, so are other people. I think the problem wasn't so much that we had budget problems. I think the problem, as I said before, came in that we increased the difference between in-state and out-of-state tuition so much over those years that now it wasn't cost-effective for people in Indiana and Ohio and Illinois to consider MSU as opposed to their own
Purdue or...
Right, exactly. And in the old days, we were such a good buy that in the late 60s and early 70s, our competition for honor students wasn't the student's home state university, public university. They were the Ivies and the other privates. We had a lot of students who had applied here and to us, there and to us, there and to us. And we did pretty well there because we were such a phenomenally good value. I mean, it's like being able to buy vintage, the finest vintage wine for $1.99 a bottle, you see. Still, not very many years ago, who was it? One of the special issues that U.S. News and World Report, I think, does on values and best buys in higher education. They did a special thing on honors programs, and we were one of the features, and we were identified as the best buy. Oh, it was called How to Get an Ivy League Education at a Public Institution.
I see.
And we were identified as the best buy there. But I don't know that was for out-of-state as opposed to in-state. They may have just been considering in-state residency. So students still do get a phenomenally good education here. I think we have a great undergraduate program to begin with. I've always told my friends in the National Collegiate Honors Council, you can't have a great honors program in a second-rate institution. You got to have a first-rate institution. Honors programs you can't make an institution a better institution with an honors program. You got to have a good institution to get a good honors program, and then you get a synergy that really works and it feeds on itself. And we had that for a lot of years, and I think we're getting back to having it again because students are more active now, they're more involved. There's a critical mass of students out there. They're far more involved in terms of co and extracurricular activities as honor students than they ever have been in the past. So it's really a matter of...
It sounds like you're optimistic.
Yeah, I'm very optimistic. I mean, we've got a lot of difficulties facing us in terms of budget and all of that. In fact, one of the reasons we shouldn't print this, but one of the reasons I decided to retire next year is that I I'm expensive in terms of the staff. I'm one of the two assistant directors. Ron will be able to do some restructuring. Not that I don't want to retire. Mm-hmm. I do want to retire. But I think retire now because I want the unit to continue to have that kind of ability to adjust and to not be strapped for nickels and dimes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really bad when you're strapped for nickels and dimes. You can't send out a good glossy brochure to recruit students because you can't afford to print it. Mm-hmm. And recruiting high ability students is really an expensive operation. I don't know what it costs us, but I remember reading somewhere a couple years ago, I think it was Princeton or someplace like that, said it was over $15,000 is what it cost to recruit a student, mm-hmm. each and every student. Wow. Successfully. I mean, it had to be less than that, but it was in the thousands. Oh. Mm-hmm. You think $9.95.
When you left Missouri and came here, did you anticipate you'd be here career?
Definitely not. I thought I was going to come to Michigan State, complete my PhD in 4 years, maybe five, and then I was going to get a position teaching philosophy of education at a public institution, hopefully a land-grant public institution, because I am a land-grant college freak. University of Missouri is public and land grant. Mm-hmm. And there are relatively few places in the country that have the distinction of being that. Public, land grant, and I'm blanking.
The research?
Yeah.
Component too?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Missouri and Michigan State are two of, I think there are only eight or nine uh-huh. Uh-huh. in the country that are land grant and among the elite of research institutions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So.
That's interesting.
And when I got here, I really liked it. Mm-hmm. I don't like the area that much because where I grew up, on one side of Main Street, the curbs are this tall, and on the other side of Main Street, the curbs are that tall. And I had to move from there before I knew that there were basements that were not walkout basements. And here, a hill is hard to find. And if you see a rock bigger than your fist, you know somebody brought it in. And I'm used to mountains. I grew up in the foothills of the Ozarks. I yearn for those now and then. But in every other respect, I love MSU. I think it's a great place. I think the people of Michigan are blessed to have one of the finest undergraduate institutions in the country and one of the best graduate institutions down the road as well. Mm-hmm. But they don't do undergraduate education the way we do at MSU, by golly. They really don't.
You mentioned the land-grant philosophy and some of those, which maybe leads to my last question, and that is, in looking back at your career, in terms of Michigan State, is there anything that you deem to be most important?
Well, I think probably, I mean, apart from falling into this job in the first place, when Jim Pickering was willing to, in effect, give me a promotion and give me more responsibilities and give me more more active role, not just as an academic advisor, but as a real assistant director, that I think probably was the most important thing that sealed my fate in a way, because I then began to look at this as a real career. Oh, I didn't say career. I've often told folks I haven't had a career. I've had a calling. it's more like the ministry than it is a career.
Many teachers use that. Good teachers use that phrase.
Right.
They see the connection.
Yeah.
That, and addressing freshmen, you're probably an evangelist of that.
Yes.
At AOP.
Yes.
Well, I'd like to thank you on behalf of the Oral History Project, and I appreciate your insight and the time that we spent. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. It was a pleasure.